Colonial Americans took seriously the biblical mandate to increase and multiply. The reasons were religious, but also practical. Many children died at birth or infancy, and new hands were always needed to work the house and farm.
Oh, when shall I see Jesus and reign with him above?
Of those who could not bear children, Puritan preachers offered two opinions. Hardliners, such as Boston's Cotton Mather, darkly warned that being barren meant God had cast a judgment upon you. In one sermon, Mather wrote,
"Without your faith in Christ, no good fruit is to be expected from you. Nor do I expect any good fruit, lest you come to a union with your Lord Redeemer."
Childlessness brought an air of suspicion on someone in the colonial period.
Historian Elaine Tyler May has studied infertility in American culture. May says that the colonists often feared that the actions of one could bring God's wrath upon the many. Barrenness was a sign.
If a couple was childless, generally the woman was considered to blame. It's interesting to note that those people who were accused of witchcraft were much more likely to be childless.
Other clergymen counseled a less pessimistic view. According to historian Margaret Marsh, they considered infertility a test of faith imposed by God.
For some of them, they said, the Lord may choose not to give you children because he has a different purpose in mind for you.
To pass God's test, infertile couples had to demonstrate their selflessness.
One way you could do that was by being a parent in the community, by fostering other children, caring for other children, doing good works, doing charity work.
Childless couples often took in the children of widows or poor families. After his father died, John Hancock, that flamboyant signatory to the Declaration of Independence, was raised by a wealthy childless uncle and aunt as their own son. For hundreds of years, Americans possessed the murkiest notions of what causes infertility. Until well into the 20th century, society considered it almost exclusively a woman's problem. That was certainly true for the father of our country.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Mount Vernon. You don't have a lot of time.
At George Washington's Virginia plantation, Mount Vernon, the white children who capered about the house and gardens were Martha Washington's children by a previous marriage. General Washington treated his stepkids like blood kin, but he and Martha never produced children of their own.
Bedroom of General and Mrs. Washington has a private wing off to the south of the house. Think about how this room would have looked if somewhere the Washingtons would have been able to have a crib in here.
Historians say that on at least two occasions, George battled illnesses that could have left him infertile. But in a letter to his nephew, the aging president made clear he thought Martha the barren one, even though she had conceived four previous times.
If Mrs. Washington should survive me, there is a moral certainty of my dying without issue.
Meaning he wasn't the type to fool around.
And should I be the longest alive, the matter, in my opinion, is almost as certain. For whilst I retain the reasoning faculties, I shall never marry a girl. And it is not probable that I should have children by a woman of an age suitable to my own.
He simply assumed that she was infertile, and it never occurred to him that he might have been.
Again, historian Elaine Tyler May.
The assumption was that if a man was not impotent, that he was fertile.
In the early 1800s, physicians began treating infertility as a medical condition and called it sterility instead of barrenness. They still did not fully understand how human reproduction works. Doctors believed that infertility was caused by bodily imbalances, prescribing elixirs and dietary schemes to regulate the female constitution. By mid-century, doctors specializing in the emerging field of gynecology focused on surgical treatments. One prominent New York City doctor operated on scores of women to enlarge their cervical openings, believing a wider passageway to the uterus would expedite the flow of sperm to egg. The doctor never proved that these painful experiments produced actual pregnancies. Where colonial women stood accused of lacking religious conviction, infertile women in the Victorian era were suspected of ignoring their proper domestic roles. At the time, physicians considered the female body a delicate vessel, easily damaged by unchecked social exertion or stress. One Harvard physician wrote a book arguing that education was spreading sterility by manufacturing women with monstrous brains and puny bodies.
The reproductive machinery, to be well made, must be carefully managed. force must be allowed to flow thither in an ample stream, and not diverted to the brain by the school.
Historian Margaret Marsh says the 19th century impulse to shield women in the safety of the home was part of a larger trend in American society, away from the big, extended, utilitarian families of the colonial era.
A new idea arose about what the family meant. The family became more privatized, women became more responsible for what went on in the family. Children became the purpose of family life, especially middle and upper middle class family life, in a way that they hadn't been before.
In 1861, a prominent Southern society lady named Mary Chestnut had been married for 2 decades, but at age 38 still had no children. Chestnut agonized in her diary over the scorn she felt from her aristocratic and domineering in-laws.
Women have such a contempt for a childless wife. Mrs. Chestnut was bragging to me one day with exquisite taste. To me, a childless wretch of her 27 grandchildren. And Colonel Chestnut, a man who rarely wounds me, said to her, "You have not been a useless woman in this world."
At the turn of the 20th century, white Americans grew increasingly anxious about what they perceived as an infertility crisis in their neighborhoods. The birth rate among middle-class whites was at an all-time low, in part because couples were choosing to have fewer children. President Theodore Roosevelt warned that immigrants and minorities were too fertile and that Anglo-Saxons were in danger of committing race suicide by not keeping up baby for baby.
"The chief of blessings for any nation is that it shall leave its seed to inherit the land. The greatest of all curses is sterility. And the severest of all condemnations should be that visited upon willful sterility."
As the 20th century unfolded, medical science made big advances in understanding infertility. Researchers discovered the hormones that regulate reproduction. They recognized that low sperm counts and poor sperm quality in men are a significant cause of infertility. And in the last 20 years, in vitro fertilization, egg and sperm donation, and other high-tech procedures have revolutionized the field. A condition that colonial Americans saw as a spiritual failing, suburban Americans now regard as a scientific hurdle. Yet stigmas persist. In studying the history of infertility, Elaine Tyler May heard from many infertile couples who today sense a hint of the same suspicions visited on childless Puritans more than 300 years ago.
They said, "My life is really fine without children, but I feel like I should have children because I wouldn't be perceived as a responsible, full adult if I didn't have them."
To be a real American, May says, you still have to be somebody's parent. This is Stephen Smith, Minnesota Public Radio.